Are you ready to experience something extraordinary? Cultural gems in Croatia, ancient temples in Asia, art in Italy. We'll take care of everything. Flights, accommodation, excursions, local guides, and all that planning. Travel department. Let's see more.
Know Your Rights, Know Your Options, a short podcast series with Senior Times.
Healthcare, in all its forms, is a vastly complicated and uniquely important aspect of all our lives, from birth to death. If we're lucky, our interactions with the healthcare system between those two events will be rare, but chances are, the older we get, the more doctors, nurses, medical technicians, and hospital administrators we're going to meet. Usually, the experience is positive, as is the outcome. But inevitably, there are times when some of us feel in varying degrees let down, disappointed, or occasionally more seriously mistreated. In other words, that we have a complaint. But how to be heard and how to get redress, whether it's an acknowledgement, an apology, a reassessment, or simply better treatment, isn't always clear. You may feel intimidated by bureaucracy, embarrassed by detail. You may simply not feel sufficiently articulate to make your case properly. Whatever the difficulty is, you may need help making your point. There is help out there in the form of the Patient Advocacy Service. And today I'm talking via Zoom to Georgina Cruz, who is National Manager of the PAS, and to Elaine Winters, who is an advocate with PAS. Georgina and Elaine, welcome to Senior Times. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us. I'd like to start in time-honoured fashion by asking you, Georgina, to lay out your stall, as it were. What is the PAS and what does it do?
Well, thank you very much, Connor, for inviting us on here and giving us the opportunity to chat about the Patient Advocacy Service. Our background is really, it goes back to around 2014, where there was a primetime investigates programme done in relation to baby deaths in Portlaoise Hospital. And there was a follow-up, I suppose, inspection done by HICWA, who produced a report. And it was the way the families were treated within that whole patient safety incident and the reviews that took place afterwards. And they recommended that there would be, and there should be, a patient advocacy service to support families in these cases. And then the Ombudsman produced a report, Learning to Get Better, which dealt with how the service, health services reacts to complaints and the learning that should take place for that. And then that followed on with stakeholder engagement, and it was brought into the programme for government about having an independent patient advocacy service. And in 2018, following all that stakeholder engagement, it went out to tender. Mm-hmm. And the National Advocacy Service for People with Disabilities tendered for that, and they were successful in that. So the service we are, as an independent advocacy service, we support people through complaint issues in acute hospitals. We started off as that. We were launched in November 2019 by the then Minister of Health. And I suppose we started in November 2019. We went into COVID in March 2020. We were within the queue, so that created difficulty for us in and around our awareness and getting together. And then our initial contract was for up to October 2022. There was a second tender put out in February of 2022. And again, the National Advocacy Service for People with Disabilities was successful in that. So our current contract is for 5 years, and that goes out to 2027. I suppose as a result of COVID, the initial remit that we had around complaints in the hospitals, COVID, I suppose, highlighted the difficulties in and around nursing homes. So in June 2021, our remit was extended into HSE-funded nursing homes and supporting people through complaints that they might have with the service they've received. We also support people in the aftermath of patient safety incidents. And then following recommendations from the COVID expert working group, it was to expand our services even further across all nursing homes. So there was regulatory change in March of this year, And that's where we've extended now to all nursing homes. So we're there, as I said, we're in a paramount advocacy service. So we do support people to make the complaints. What the regulations did and the changes is it increased the rights of residents to access to independent advocacy supports. And it also made the complaint process more robust, particularly in and around the private nursing homes, because they are private entities. So everybody has a complaints process that should be investigated. It should have the four stages: informal, formal, and then an internal review opportunity and an external review opportunity.
Yeah.
So that's where we are with that. And that's how we came about, really.
I suppose the big word in all of that is independent, which has two fairly distinct meanings, I guess, given the two sectors that you work in terms of acute hospitals. The significance of that is that you're independent of the HSE, mm-hmm. and in terms of nursing homes, that you're independent of the nursing homes, which of course is a lot of different bodies. What does it mean in terms of patient advocacy to be independent? I mean, how is independence an operating factor?
Well, we are, as you say, we are that independent. We're also confidential and free. We're fully funded by the Department of Health, so we're entirely dependent from the HSE from that point of view, in that none of our funding is there. Again, we're entirely independent of the other service providers because there's no funding that comes in from that. I suppose that we're independent and impartial. There's no conflict of interest there. We've no vested interest in anything. So that again highlights our independence. And I suppose the second meaning of that for the patient or the resident is their independence in and around this whole process. We do carry that within our core values, that we are person-led, we're being guided by the person. Mm-hmm. We keep them at the center of it. It's all about supporting them to have their voice and heard and their will and preference, you know, respected. So I suppose the independence for us has the double meaning in that we are totally independent. We have that impartiality. There's no conflict of interest there. There's no vested interest in anything. We're not there, you know, seeing what's going on and representing either side. We're there to be there for the patient or the residents in this incident and help them bring forward their independence and their autonomy within the process as well.
Yeah, now I suppose there's probably a tendency for people to associate complaint mechanisms with the more kind of headline worthy cases of clinical or surgical disasters and serious injuries resulting from treatments, particularly in surgical situations. But I'm assuming that most of your work is not at that sort of level. What sort of range of complaints would you typically be handling?
It can range from somebody having a simple inquiry about their medical records, freedom of information request to a hospital. You could get an inquiry about that. You can get somebody who's have a complaint about the care they received in hospital. That could be how long they were waiting in ED. It might be, you know, a referral letter that's gone missing. It could be communications in general. There's a whole range of things within that. So, yeah, it's quite a wide range. And the person's complaint, whatever their complaint is, it is valid. So, you know, we don't say, no, that's not a valid complaint. We will accept that, whatever their complaint is. In a nursing home, you could have a complaint that might be, you know, it could be about, you know, their meals. It could be that their meal is cold it's not timely.
Yeah.
Does that give an idea?
Yeah, so it doesn't need to be something life-threatening. It can be simply the sort of complaint you might make at a hotel front desk.
Sponsored by Expressway. With My Expressway, free travel pass holders can reserve their seats online at expressway.ie or at our ticket machines in stations.
Are you interested in trying a new smartphone but still a little unsure? Do you want a phone that offers larger icons with louder sound and an interface that has technology designed for seniors? Well, why not choose from the Doro range by simply visiting doro.ie. Doro, make friends with innovation.
The biggest area, I suppose, that we see issues in and around is communication. Communication is key, and be that whether it's rude behavior, you know, staff being angry, anxiety is being acknowledged but not addressed, down to the complaints process itself and how people are dealt with. It can be the smallest thing right up to unexpected death. So we deal with a wide range of things, you know, from appointments being cancelled, visiting not being available, maternal death and unexpected death. So we do cover a wide range.
Information would be another point, you know, within communications. You know, people aren't clear what their diagnosis was leaving the hospital. Why am I taking this medication? Why is it important for me to keep taking it? There are a few simple kind of points of information that people need.
What would be a typical case that you'd be handling?
As an advocate on the ground in the patient advocacy service, people can access the service through a national line that's open Monday to Friday, 10 to 4 p.m. And the phone number is 0818-293-003. And they can also contact us through email address, which is info@patientadvocacyservice.ie. So, yeah, the typical kind of queries that we might get on the phone line, you could get somebody that's phoning up with an inquiry looking for information. They might also be coming to you with a complaint about the care they received in a hospital, or it could be about a nursing home. It could be somebody else ringing on behalf of somebody looking for information. So one of the first things we do is listen to what the person is saying. And from there, you get a sense of, okay, what's happening here? And tease out the issue with them, you know, with a few questions maybe. So if it's an inquiry, we will give them the information there and then. Then some people are just happy with that. Then another person, it could be, you know, okay, they have a complaint about the care they got in the hospital. They tried to get it resolved, you know, in the hospital. They spoke to someone. So, you know, this wasn't responded to, and they want to make a formal complaint. So we would support them step by step, letting them know, okay, what is it? There is such a thing as a complaints process, and a step by step process again that they would go through. So they've tried stage one, informal. Stage two is writing a letter, putting down in writing what your complaint is. At that stage, to make a complaint effective, we'll discuss with them what is the outcome that they want to achieve from making a complaint. Are there questions that they have that they want answered? And then we'd also discuss with them the limitations of the process and what they might be able to expect, you know? So we'd let them know that the process will provide answers to questions that, you know, there might be an apology if that's necessary, if they're looking for one. And then also, if they're not happy with the outcome, they get a report. From a stage two complaint, you get a written report within 30 days. So if you're happy, that could be the end of it at that stage. But there might be still some questions, or maybe the person thinks, no, I'm not satisfied. So there's a next step, which is called a stage three, an internal review. And beyond that, then you have a choice to get an external review from maybe the ombudsman, or if it's a, you know, it could be the medical council, could be the data commission's office. So it depends. It could be Carew. So there's the different boards that are there for redress, depending on the type of complaint. We're getting more and more complaints now from the nursing home field. So again, that's about the care. So listening to the person's experience is the most important thing as a first step. And to ascertain, where do they want to go with this complaint? Do they want to get it locally, for example?
a question that occurs to me, particularly with reference to nursing homes, is I know, because I'm myself of that sort of age, I've had a parent in a nursing home in recent years. A lot of the grumbles, shall we say, as much as complaints that one hears about nursing homes, is to do with fees and charging. Now, is that something that you address? Is that within your remit?
Well, the Fair Deal is outside of our remit itself. Mm-hmm. But if there's issues to do with the contract, we'll ask people to, you know, get their contract of care. What is in there? So we could look at that with them. If it was, for example, somebody saying, I'm being charged for activities, but I'm not getting them. Let's look, what is in your contract? That's you know, a very important first point to look at.
Now, if I'm understanding you correctly, Elaine, part of what you do would involve, sometimes at least, teasing out with the complainant what it is that they want to complain about. I mean, I would imagine that sometimes you're getting calls from people who are just upset and angry, who feel, you know, just that they've been wronged in some kind of way, but they can't necessarily resolve in their own minds what their complaint is. Is that something you can help with, or do you keep your hands off until the person has actually managed to maybe vocalise what their complaint is?
We're the process is really important, and we value and understand that is, in the first instance, a person can be really upset. They mightn't be ready to articulate beyond that they're really upset. We're all trained. We're professionally trained advocates. We're trained in trauma-informed care. We're bereavement trained, so that the person will get an understanding and an empathic response from us when they do call us. And that's just the first stage, you know, so it's important to allow that space and time for the person to, you know, be heard. And actually having a chance to be heard and to be understood can go a long way in resolution, in a process.
How far down a complaint through the procedure do you go? I mean, at some point, I'm sure it's relatively a rarity, but at some point, complaints may end up in litigation. And mm-hmm. at the point where things, as they say, go legal, do you then step aside?
We do. It's a completely separate process, mm-hmm. and we'd be very clear with somebody that we're not legally trained. We don't give legal advice. However, we will tell somebody that there is a statute of limitation of 2 years. And if they are seeking legal advice, that to be very aware of that, because time does go quickly. We'll say, you know, we will work with you in a complaints process. But as soon as legal proceedings are instituted or instigated, then the complaints process stops.
Right. Now, I don't know who this question would go to, really, but what are the trends? Are the caseloads rising?
I suppose our service has grown year on year. We're a fairly new service, as in we're young enough. We're only here since 2019. And as I say, we had COVID. We capture our complaints using a healthcare analysis tool, which looks at quality, the environment, different things. Some of this is something that the HSC use themselves, so as to have that kind of mirrored capture of issues. You know, so we had an increase on 2021 of 54%. We're currently working on our 2023 annual report, but again, it's that increase. We've gone up again. We've gone over 2,000 inquiries, and we've had over 300 nursing home inquiries. The rest would have been from the public service, or sorry, the public hospitals. So some of the contacts, like in 2022, as I say, we had 1,859 inquiries. Now 1,690 of them were short-term advocacy, so they could have been just initial inquiries, helping people out, signposting them, giving them information, giving them advice, providing them with templates, directing them to more appropriate services. And then we had like around 160 one-to-one advocacy support. So that's where we will support the person the whole way through whatever process, whether it's the complaints process or following a patient safety incident, through the incident management framework and the open disclosure. That's the kind of work we do. In relation to family members and stuff, what we try and do is keep the person, as Elaine said, at the centre of the process. So we normally look for the consent of that person. They can nominate somebody else, or like that, if somebody has a legal reason to represent a person either through EPA or through the new decision support systems, you know, we can support a person that way.
So one thing that Elaine said that struck me was that you can deal with third parties in the sense that, I'm sure this is especially relevant in the nursing home sector, that you can actually talk to a relative or a carer of the person with the complaint.
Yeah, we can do that. As we were saying, we try and keep our whole focus, because it's person-led and person-centred, is to keep that person at the centre of the process. You can have instances where a family member may want to make a complaint, but the person themselves doesn't want to make a complaint. So it is about sometimes looking at that scenario and seeing where that goes. You know, if the person can't make the complaint themselves, family or a close under the Act, they have the right to make the complaint. But what we try and do is keep it as person-centred led as we can. And it is, again, looking for that consent. They can nominate somebody, as we've said, or if they have that EPA or they have that decision-making support person. What we are finding with more work within the nursing homes is if those legal processes haven't been in place and a family member does want to make a complaint, and there is a serious risk around the care and the that's being given, we're kind of looking at to see where we can fit in that process, you know. But certainly we will give that long arm support. Anybody that contacts our service gets a service, so we can still take that family member through that process, but we won't necessarily do that one-to-one advocacy and support through that.
I could add to that there, Connor, just as an example. For example, so if a relative, the person, their relative that's a resident in the nursing home, because they're living there, they are reluctant to make a complaint about the care they're receiving. Like Georgina is saying, long arm support. If I'm speaking to that relative, I will still, you know, signpost them for good information, so that people are empowered when they have good information as a starting point. And then maybe a little bit of support around the good questions to ask. So that's what we call long arm support. We may not be directly involved, but we will certainly provide a support in that form.
Yeah. How do you measure your performance? Obviously, it can be a slightly subjective area, whether a case has been, whether the outcome is satisfactory to all parties or not, and whether something actually has been resolved at all can be, I guess, sometimes debatable. But how do you assess your own performance, and what is your own performance like?
Well, everybody that we would work with is given the opportunity to give feedback, and they wouldn't give that directly to me. I would provide them with a form to send to my team lead, for example. But that's about our performance as PAS. But then, like, the outcomes of a complaint, that's another measure there, perhaps. And sometimes, like I was saying, somebody gets a stage 2 report and they read through it. They may not be happy with what's written there. So we look at the next steps. And sometimes it might be that a meeting is required. So, okay, we can't change this. Having a person sitting down around a table and having the opportunity to give their experience and say, you know, this is what it felt like to me. This was my experience. That can have a transformative element to it around the table. And I've had people who, you know, like that, very unhappy with an investigation report, because they're two very different perspectives. So, and you can't adjudicate on what's, you know, what maybe the truth will say in that situation. So, but having, taking an approach that the person, the impact of that experience, that's that person's. So from that approach, they're given that space. If there's a, you know, a hospital would agree to that meeting, they have an advocate sitting beside them. So you could be sitting around with maybe 4 members of staff. Here's the person, and they have their independent advocate present at the meeting. So that can provide a very satisfactory outcome on a personal level for the person, rather than a structural change.
But I would imagine that simply being heard in a lot of cases is half the answer.
I agree with you. And being understood. So that space to be really, you know, that people take their time out of busy schedule. You're given that time around the table. And this is what one person described to me, that she had an opportunity to face-to-face be, you know, she saw these people as very important people, but she was given that time. And she said her feedback was that it was closure that she had got. And taking a stage three or going to an external ombudsman, that wasn't necessary. The person was satisfied with that outcome.
The person at the PAS end that one is dealing with, does that person stay the same? Are you likely to be passed around the houses or around the desks in dealing with PAS, or will you have the same person, will you be talking to the same person all the time through?
You will. Our team leads, when we get somebody on the phone or an email in, the person on the phone will talk, take details, listen to the experience, and that then is put forward to our team leads, who will allocate an advocate to that person. The advocate then will work one-to-one throughout the process with the person.
Sometimes one of the most frustrating things about following a complaint through can be having to explain the same thing to different people time after time.
And that's even a complaint issue from people in the hospitals. So yeah, no, we're cognizant of that, and that it is a dedicated advocate for a person through the process.
Your website is, and I don't say this very often, but your website is excellent in the sense that it's beautifully designed. It's as clear as day, and it has some great resources on it.
Just adding on to that, Connor, like the lived experience is really powerful, and I think that's what the case book and the case studies demonstrates as well. And like following on from your question that Elaine answered around the outcomes on that, I mean, part of our role as well is to bring that up at a higher level, you know, so through the complaints, if we're supporting people through a process and we're highlighting systemic issues or themes that are, you know, consistent across areas, we can escalate that. We have a memorandum of understanding with the HSC where they are to promote and engage with our service, and there's opportunity for feedback on both sides, you know, so that quality level and that outcome level, because a big part of what we do is there should be learning from complaints and there should be improved patient safety and improved health service quality, you know, and that's really the strength of where we are. And even the more people complain, the better things will get. And you talked about those high profile patient safety incidents. It shouldn't need that for a reaction. It's the smaller things on the ground that accumulate that really can cause daily issues. So that's where our service would come in. And that's where we have that strength and opportunity in that, where we're not a regulatory body. We do have routes and pathways into the HSC, into HICWA, into the Ombudsman, into the Department of Health. And we're gathering all this rich data from our clients that we can feed back to them and hopefully have that learning and improvement within that service that way.
Which is all as it should be.
Yeah.
So let's remind listeners then where to go. As I said before, the website is excellent, and that's at www.patientadvocacyservice.ie.
Yes, that's right. And then our phone number, as Elaine said, it's Monday to Friday, 10 till 4 p.m. And the number there is 0818-293-003. Or people can email us at info@patientadvocacyservice.ie.
Excellent. Georgina and Elaine, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Connor.
I hope you were clear on exactly what we do.
An will phone poke and nua wet, an will knappy no fum nis orja wet. Nis eskele husaj, faker na phone eintok ata gwin, an cho, eg daro. An vone klishte is dani, gadi gohan la hai glina, agus taskina. Tá rud éigin go gachtana. Tá níos mó eolas ag daro.com.